The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires.
Hello and welcome to the Truck and Driver podcast. This session is Matt Ireland with Paul O'Callaghan again. Hello, Paul, how are you doing?
Yeah, going good, Matt. How are you going?
Yeah, very good, mate. Very good. Thank you very much. Now, I believe that you've had a slight change in the weather since we last talked.
Well, probably a change of location more so. So,
yes.
Came back to Ireland maybe about a month ago now.
Yeah.
So, we've probably had the same storm as you had over that storm, whatever name they gave it.
The unpronounceable name.
Yeah, everything has a name nowadays, all these storms. But we were actually without power here for 4 nights.
Really?
So, and there was a lot of people then, I think, in maybe up around the kind of more towards the west and the northwest, places like Leitrim, I think they were out without power for like well over a week. So,
crikey.
You know, it would kind of, when you're sitting with candles and no power, and you know your government has told you that you don't need fireplaces anymore, and even more so you should be driving an electric car, you know, you kind of begin to question that. You'd be pretty, I had the fire going here, it was nice to at least have the fire and be able to, you know, turn the key on a vehicle that didn't need to be charged, which you couldn't do anyway. So maybe just a little bit of an awakening there for people that, you know.
Yeah, I should say that.
So, I
was quite lucky in the east. It got a bit blowy, but that was about it, really. I saw obviously videos of trucks being blown over in Scotland and stuff like that. But yeah, being right on the east coast, we were pretty much unaffected by it, luckily.
Yeah, we had a couple of slates of cladding blown off the roof outside, and that was about it, really. I actually went for a walk next day uptown. Everything was closed.
Yeah,
like all the shops, it was quite surreal. Actually, you know, it was like something from a film. Really, how quiet everything was. You know, and it really would make you kind of think. All businesses had been shut down, and I'd been actually doing a few days driving, and so that was, I think, Thursday night the storm came in, so there was no driving, and quite a lot of businesses had closed down. So, but anyway, yeah, that was one element of the weather lately. It's been quite cold here, which I don't really mind at all. I don't seem to mind the extremes, Matt, either way. Cold doesn't really bother me too much. Feet get a little cold, but once I can warm up my toes, I don't mind too much.
it must be quite nice as well after the relentless heat of Australia as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And that's not to say, you know, I don't like the heat, but I do quite enjoy, you know, filling my lungs with good fresh air, and that's I've no problem at all with the lower temperatures. I quite enjoy when I get into the car or the vehicle, whatever you're driving, and you hear that little kind of a ding that goes off and it warns you that the temperature is below 2 degrees or something like that. But it's just the incessant grayness and kind of sort of slightly warmer, mild temperatures. That's probably the bit I hate the most about the weather. But everybody has their own kind of dislike. A lot of people just hate the cold. I don't mind. Don't really mind the cold, but if I can just get a little bit of blue sky there, it's all good.
Absolutely. So, any idea how long you're back for? Have you got a bit of a plan, or take it as it comes?
Yeah, exactly. It's all pretty much weather dependent. But Easter was the time frame I was given to go back. So, nice bit of time here. Just keep myself occupied. Spend a bit of time with friends and family, and then also do a little bit of driving and try and get a few trips in as well. So I was looking forward to, I was telling you there, I was up in Norway. I went up there for 10 days with a friend of mine, another long distance truck driver. So you can imagine what the itinerary was.
Yes. and Norway is such an amazing country. I mean, if you've not been there, just ignore the cost of being there, because it is damn expensive for everything, because the scenery is just stunning, isn't it? There's no other way of putting it. It's just so beautiful. I mean, I went on holiday, over 10 years ago now, I can't remember how long ago, I flew to Tromsø, right in the north, had a rental car, and I drove right across the top coast up to the North Cape, and then sort of turned around and headed back. And it's kind of almost cliche, but like over every sort of hill, you just look at the view and you're just like, wow, just every single time. And during the summer, 24-hour daylight, obviously, you went in the winter. So, I mean, but you were a lot further south, weren't you? Whereabouts do you actually go?
Yeah, so like I have been to, the first time I went there was I went up on the motorbike in summertime. That was in kind of late summer 2011. So I did all the north, and then 2 years ago, myself and the same mate that came this time, we went and did mostly probably the western fjords. Is like, it's all very, very awe inspiring, the scenery there, but the western fjords would be probably the peak of it. You know, it's just for sheer steep cliffs and.
The size of all, isn't it? It's just like,
oh, just, yeah, it's so impressive. So this time we started in Oslo, and I'd actually never been down around the bottom part before, Matt.
Yeah.
So we went in a clockwise direction, you know, from Oslo. Actually, when we picked up the hire car in Oslo, we left the airport, and it was snowing on the roads. There was actually quite a lot of snow on the road, which I was surprised by. You know, that I think they were struggling just to kind of keep the roads clear, but like for us, that's exactly what we were looking for, was plenty of snow, you know, anything bar just a mild grayness, really.
Yeah.
anyway, just, you know, we kind of got in pretty late that evening, and you know, we went just down around kind of north of Arendal. Had a stop to make in Arendal. There's a company, I'm not sure if you know, Midsdal Transport, very iconic company with a very, very unique livery. It'll be a matter of taste, but all their trucks have a unique custom paint job, every one of them. You know, they've got two different companies. They've got like a kind of a construction related division with cranes and all that, and then they've got Transport Services Arendal, which is I think they kind of sold half of it to DFDS or DSV, but they're still involved in it. But anyway, nice family company.
Yeah,
it's Dolls. We went there, you know, just to see the operation, and from there then down to Kristiansand.
Yeah.
And so Kristiansand, you're pretty much at the very southern tip, and I'd never really but you know, you always kind of want to see somewhere you haven't been before.
Yes.
So the first bit, you know, down probably, you know, from Oslo down, it was a lot of dual carriage, which is pretty boring, but after Arendal, or you know, down towards Kristiansand and on up that way, it actually turned to single carriage, and it was a really, really enjoyable drive.
Yeah.
But we stayed in Kristiansand, and there's a ferry that goes from Hirtshals in Denmark into Kristiansand.
Yeah.
So we actually stayed right in the centre of Kristiansand. There was the hotel was right beside the container port. So the following morning, my mate, he was up really early, and he went down, and there was some iconic Danish trucking companies there. You know, their trucks shipping out, and he was talking to a few of the drivers. So yeah, quite a nice crossing actually, by the sound of it, you know. And
yeah.
So the E39, then we picked up the E39 in Kristiansand, and I just noticed then that E39 is an E route, you know, and it comes up from Denmark and God knows where. It actually, I didn't even look at where it starts in the south of Europe, but I actually was never really fully aware of what an E-road actually was. You probably know more.
Well, I don't know, to be honest. I mean, it's a European-wide gig on.
Yeah, it's just funny that, you know, you leave the E39 in Denmark, and then you pick it up again in Kristiansand.
So across border.
The E18 ended. But anyway, yeah, it was you know, very nice. We came up to with another call to do, and up in Stavanger, the company there. Yeah. We wanted to see, and from there then that's when the ferry crossings, the fjord crossings started. So in total we took about six different fjord crossings, and how it works is it's just all done on a kind of like an automatic toll system. So they have your registration, and you just pay the bill when you get back at the car hire center. But those okay. ferry crossings, they're just magical. Yeah, if you know, someone said, oh, well, like, what were you going to Norway for? It's not just about taking pictures of trucks, it's the whole experience, you know. It's I'm not sure about you, I'm sure you, I quite enjoy ferry crossings, just the whole experience of driving onto a ferry, you know, going down and in you know, see what they have for sale there, and have a coffee, and And what's looking out with the scenery, some of the boats, you actually walk down into the, you know, the passenger area is down right at water level, by right beside the water, looking out, and it's just absolutely stunning, you know. Yeah. The old ferry companies, names like Fjord One and that kind of thing. So, yeah, from there we just kind of north from there, you know. I'd never been to, actually after Stavanger, there was quite a lot of tunnels. So I'm surprised a lot of the tunnels went kind of, you were sort of going downhill, you know. There was quite a steep gradient down and a steep gradient back out of it. So I'm not sure if it's they need to go that deep to let boats cross, or it's something to do with, you know, keeping strength in it or not. But yeah, we were quite surprised by that.
Yeah.
But just so much to see and do, Matt, all the way up along there.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, look, as you said, I mean, I've always loved a good ferry crossing and ticking them off as well, and just seeing the difference in them. And the length of time, you know, it gives you, especially when you're driving, you know, it gives you a chance to have a bit of rest and recuperation. I mean, some obviously, you know, some can be just like 15 minutes, can't they? Like Helsingør to Helsingborg from, you know, Denmark into Sweden. That's such a short crossing to the, you know, the ones that take a couple of days, you know, from like Germany up into Helsinki. Is it Rostock? Yeah. Rostock to Helsinki. And, oh, yeah, I've done one from Oslo to Germany, I think it was, which is pretty good. And Stavanger, funny enough, I've got a friend of mine I went to school with, lives in Stavanger now. He got involved in the oil industry, and that's how he's ended up there. I only ever got there once. I used to do Oslo pretty regularly. But, yeah, Stavanger once, Bergen once, I think, possibly twice. But you would always avoid, because you're on overnighters, you'd always, if there was like a ferry route, you'd always try and go round, just because you couldn't really guarantee how regularly they're going to cross, could you?
Yeah, no, with us, because we were on main routes there, we actually more or less always just kind of drove down and drove straight onto the ferry, you know, or even you might have a little bit of hanging around for maybe 10, 15 minutes. Yeah, which was, but you have to remember as well, we were there in wintertime, so there was no tourist traffic. And actually anywhere, you know, well, a lot of places we went, we were speaking to people and said, oh, you must come back in summertime. And we were like, no, well, then in summertime, that means tourist, you know.
Yeah, so, it's too busy.
and we wanted to see it as, you know, in the wintertime with snow and...
Yeah.
So, but those you just mentioned there about ferry crossings. I was actually reading your book on Kepso Freight. I've started it. It'll finally arrive. So postage from, it'll be quicker probably to get something sent from China to Ireland than it would from England to Ireland. I don't know. It's and this is not even kind of Brexit related. Even before Brexit, there's always been a. For some reason, it's always been like slow and expensive to get sent. But anyway, I got it, and I was quite surprised to read that some of those guys were getting a ferry from England to Finland.
Yep, Harwich to Turku.
Harwich to Turku. So yep. It was like a freight boat, I presume.
predominantly, more yes. I think, yeah, it would only take a certain amount of accompanied people. And also quite often what they do, they put the trucks on the ferry, because I think it used to go at the weekend a lot, and the drivers actually go home and then just fly out to Turku a couple of days later and go and pick the trucks up from the dock. So they actually got a weekend at home before setting off again. It's just almost such a leisurely way of doing it, isn't it?
So then I presume they went up the North Sea and then, you know, came down... You know, over sort of between Denmark and Sweden and down into the, you know, through the Baltic that way.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure it was. Yeah, they used to go through the Kiel Canal as well, because there was one driver, because you had to give your passports in, I believe. And there was one guy who's no longer with us, because they gave his passport in. He was actually a wanted man in Germany, and so when the when the ferry went through, they clocked his name, and the ferry was boarded, and off he went with them, and into jail he went for a couple of years. So that's another story for another day. But yeah, I guess that's
the route. Just the way they were. You just mentioned the Kiel Canal, and that just struck a chord with me, because I didn't know that existed. But am I right in saying that the Kiel Canal goes across, you can kind of go across, it goes all the way sort of across that part of Germany?
I believe so. It must do now, for you to be able to get through somehow.
Yeah, I just remember, in recent times hearing about it and looking it up. It might have been perhaps built in around the 1940s or something like that. But I do remember reading something that it wasn't quite big enough for. No, I could be might be wrong on that. But anyway, yeah, it was.
Yeah,
it
so,
was,
you, so yeah, it looks like you go around sort of Cuxhaven into the Elbe, and then it sort of cuts off and goes sort of north up across Rendsburg, and then comes across into Kiel and out back into the sea there. So I don't know how, it'd be interesting to see how long it actually takes. I mean, you must be able to do like a cruise along there, I suppose, and like a tourist boat.
Yeah, I think you can do a cruise on a tourist boat, all right. Yeah, but no, ferries, I've always enjoyed, ferry crossings, and my partner on the trip has set the record of all the ferry crossings he's done in his career as a professional truck driver. So there's quite a lot there. I got the one before from Frederikshavn in Denmark, across to Gothenburg and also then from Stockholm across the Turku and Helsinki, but I've never actually sailed into Norway. So we saw quite a lot of signs, along the road for ferry crossings. I know there was a sailing before, and maybe there still is a freight sailing from Norway to England, is there?
There certainly used to be. I don't think any of them run anymore, or if they do, I don't think they do anything in a company, because they used to be Colour Line, and it was
Colour Line are still... because we actually...
I believe Colour Line got bought out, I think. So they used to sail into Newcastle, I think it was.
Okay.
Because it was the only time I ever got a ferry out of Oslo, that was the Colour Line terminal, although I believe from memory it was Colour Line had been bought out from memory. And we sailed down to Germany. I can't remember where it was, to be honest.
Yeah, there is a... Because I think there's two terminals. We took a drive in there just to see... And there's a Colour Line one, and still Colour Line branding and all that, and there are still Colour Line ships, and then there's like a DFDS or DSV one as well. So there's two separate ones, but I think there is a long one, a long boat that goes down into Germany. So
because it's a regular one is Immingham to Gothenburg as well that runs every weekend. I think that goes, and it's got room for. Only it's not many, maybe a dozen, if not less, accompany drivers. Doesn't take many at all, but that's a very regular one as well. So
I got one before from Esbjerg into Harwich, maybe.
Yes, because I did that once because my truck got hit by a cherry picker in Finland, I think it was. So it had to go back for repair because it smashed the screen, front panel, and it bent my wipers, I think it was, from memory. So I had to go back and get another truck whilst mine was repaired. And the lead driver they wanted me to drive back overland, and he's like, I'll get you on the boat, And he spoke to him and said, well, if he does get stopped in Germany, that's then going to be a recovery job, and, be probably easy. In fact, there might have even been hit in Denmark. I can't remember. So, I ended up getting the Esbjerg ferry back to Harwich, and it was brilliant. It was very nice. Enjoyable. Yeah.
Yeah, I had good memories of that as well. I was only on it once or twice, and like a DFDS freighter or something, but just, all the basic but good.
Yeah. I mean, it's... Because I've often asked quite a few different people who actually run, and operate the vehicles as to why they don't use ferries as much. And it's basically cheaper to drive overland regardless of where your ferry crossings usually are. But as my mate also argues, if he gets the ferry from the UK to Spain, whilst he's on that boat, he's not using any diesel, you're not going to get a blowout, so on and so forth. It swings and roundabouts and... If your budget is very limited, it is just cheaper to go around, unfortunately. So as frustrating as it seems when you've got a nice boat that you can sit on and let the boat take the strain, that's that's the modern world, unfortunately.
And also, I was a little bit saddened to see that they're actually building a tunnel between Germany and Denmark.
Are they?
Because it's a massive project.
Right.
But it'll kind of I don't know if it'll completely eliminate the Puttgarden to Rodbyhavn and Helsingør to Helsingborg, which was first time I ever went north of Germany. That was the way I went, and I've been that way. You know, and it was just a nice kind of you were at different stages. You know, you were going from Germany, and then you disembarked in Denmark, and then you drove up through the island and
over the bridges.
And you disembarked, and it was all sort of, it was just kind of all these kind of landmarks
and all part of it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Now, whenever it's finished, you're going to be able to just, drive into a tunnel in Germany and drive off.
I wonder whether the ferry will still operate potentially for people who want to use it as an alternative. Because the only downside to that crossing was in the summer, it used to get so busy, and like every ferry company, they would then prioritise the tourists over the trucks, and it was always very frustrating. So but also you'd have that option of going around, which was longer. Head up through Flensburg, up to Colding, and across the bridge there. But it is non-stop, and you'd avoid a lot of delays at the ferry. But I suppose
the bridge across to Malmö.
Yes.
Yeah. I realised, for some reason, I was looking at that bridge. I'll tell you what it was. Actually, I was looking at there's a rail service that comes from the top of Norway. I think maybe Fosk or somewhere roughly like that for bringing primarily fish, and it comes right the way down to Padborg. And I couldn't understand how a train could go, from Norway into Denmark, but apparently that bridge in Malmö, there's a train line underneath.
Yes, there is. Yep. And also, for people who've never been on the ferry as well, that goes from Puttgarden to Rodbyhavn, that has also got a train line in it. So the train actually comes. Have you ever been on board when the train comes on?
I've seen it before. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I did it, I think, once when they put the train on. It's quite surreal seeing a train inching onto the ferry when you're on there as well. It's, very different.
Very different, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so, that was like lots of ferry crossings. And then there was a couple of places I wanted to see, Matt, up on the Western Fjord. So kind of up around Mold, and there were a few places, Averøy, kind of right out on the coast, which was kind of where I would have seen or heard of trucks loading fish.
Yeah.
That was somewhere else we went, and we were quite happy to see a couple of the well-known companies out there loading fish. There was, we saw a Venus truck there, Business Transport, and also it's a company called Tomran Transport. They've got a new Scania R770 painted in the colours of Ulands Transport, which is which were actually bought out by Stees around the 80s. But anyway, that was there, and we had that was all really, really cool, and just nice scenery there, and just a gentle kind of a nice coastal kind of a fishing way of life out there.
Absolutely. I'm gonna have to go back as soon as you told me you've been there and sent me some photos. Instantly I was just like, man, I miss Norway and Scandinavia. It's just amazing. And you also did the Atlantic Highway, I believe.
I did the Atlantic Road. I'd been there on the motorbike, and it, when I was there before, like it was, it was the end of, I think it was like August time, it rained. Like they get a lot of rain out there.
Yes.
A lot of rain. So anyway, we went there and no rain. And it was quite cool to see. Got a couple of pictures of, there's a company from Mold called Atlantico. I don't know if you know their trucks, cream and red.
Yes. Yeah.
So one of them, we actually went to their yard as well. And took a few pictures, and one of them came over the bridge. So it was very fitting, to see an Atlantico on the Atlantic Road.
Yeah.
And so that's a famous place for taking pictures. And,
yes.
From just basically, kind of winding our way all up along. We didn't go any further north than Trondheim. The weather was, when I say the weather was bad, it was just kind of got grey and. and rainy, but it wasn't like a mission just to get as far north as possible. It was just to kind of take time and you know, just kind of leave,
enjoy it.
The famous saying, leave a little bit of salt on the bread, you know, just to so we can, you know, they'll always go back. But there's so many different routes. Like there was you know, there was sort of the route from Oslo to Bergen that we've been on. You know, the first one we went a few years ago, we took the 134 from Oslo across to Haugesund. A brilliant road, really enjoyable. But there's also another road if you want to go to Bergen. We were talking to a few drivers about and probably go there. So we presume then that
the more southern route.
Yes, yeah. And yeah. We presumed all the traffic. We left Trondheim and we presumed all the traffic would be taking the E6 to Oslo. But there was a company who wanted to go and see Espeland Transport. So we turned off onto the, I think it might have been the Highway 3. But anyway, as we were turning off, all the trucks were turning off as well. And it turned out to be a real gem of a road. You know, once you get off the main kind of thoroughfares, there's so much to see. It started snowing as well, which added to it. And we had no problems anywhere. Like, you know, most of the, once they see you taking photographs, they're all, you know, you get a wave or whatever. It was only a couple of guys from countries that, you know, where everything is kind of drivers, you know, not Norwegian, who come from countries that were probably, you know, everything is based on suspicion, who had a few issues with us. We just laughed it off, you know. No photo. Well, sorry, pal, it's here in a public place, so
that's right. there's two of us.
but you know, I think it's just they come from a culture where, you know, everything is like suspicion. They probably wouldn't understand how someone could attain joy from taking a picture.
And I think as well, because they get so much hassle from all corners, don't they? Just because of the nature of the business, and you know, they're probably thinking you're going to be trying to report them for something potentially as well, and it's not just a hobby. If you see what I mean.
Well, there is a bit of that, but it's very easy to identify them for some reason.
Yeah.
If you see a high vis jacket on the passenger seat, generally tell.
Yes.
From, so I don't know. I actually can't really understand why people put the high vis on the passenger seat, but it's a rough kind of a guide. But anyway, just going back to it there when you were just talking about regulation and that. So even though they're not in the EU,
they're EC, aren't they?
I don't think they ever joined. But
Norway's EC, isn't it?
EC.
Yes, European Community, same as Switzerland, but not
European. Oh yes, sorry. Yeah. Same as Switzerland. So, but basically, they may as well be in because they adopt rules more than you probably even have in the EU. So it's kind of, you know, I started thinking, geez, you know, you could be your own, have your own. So, for example, we were in a transport company and they had, because they're not in the EU, you know, you'd be thinking, well, they don't have to put up with the CPC nonsense. But they've gone a step further. Like, you have to do actually a week of training, you know, because we were there and they had, you know, the drivers were going off with a driver trainer who was pointing out their bad habits and this. So yeah, that's it. And then of course the big one, Matt, electric vehicles, the one that everyone loves. So it's all Teslas over there, and they want to be, so I think last year like 90% of cars sold were electric.
Wow.
And the reason is that it's if you're a car buyer, you almost can't not buy an electric car purely for, you know, economic reasons. So because Norway is so rich, they don't really need, so you can buy an electric car tax-free, you get, you know, your parking is free, all your tolls and that are vastly reduced. So it's, people are doing it for, they're not doing it purely that they don't want to
virtue, not for environmental reasons, but for
Yeah, it's financial reasons. So
the incentives are really there for you to buy an electric car.
Yeah, well, and the reason that the Norwegian government can do it is that they have such vast oil and gas reserves, which they're not decreasing the amount of gas and oil. They're actually increasing the amount of gas and oil that they're that they're pulling out of the sea. So it's I don't know if you call it like a dichotomy or something, but they're look, they don't need the revenue from the cars, so they can let people run the cars quite cheaply. And I noticed as well that they're aiming for all trucks sold by 2030 to be electric.
Blimey, that's have they got the infrastructure there to accommodate it?
Not for trucks yet. For cars, yeah, they seem to be getting there. Like, they're putting in charging stations, and also they have the space. You see, once you get out of Oslo, you know, it's more or less empty. You know, there's 5,500 million people, and you look at the size of the place. So they have the money and they have the space. Now, regarding electric trucks, I'd still be kind of very suspicious of that, you know, or I can't really see, you know, how that's going. You know, we spoke to an operator in the spring, and he was more or less saying that he couldn't see it happening. You know, his trucks, they can go over to somewhere like, you know, a big centre like Oslo and back in one day, you know, just on a 9 or 10 hour card or whatever the thing is like. So I didn't see how it was going on. But look, nonetheless, they're full steam ahead. And we visited one company down south of Oslo, and they had four electric Volvos.
Right.
Out of a fleet of probably about 100 trucks. But now we were there at probably 2 or 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and three of those trucks were there charging. So I'm sure, you know, they're probably doing local enough deliveries around Oslo.
I mean, I guess the biggest problem they're going to have is if they're running internationally, you've got to rely on the next countries having the infrastructure as well as Norway to be charging up on you.
Yeah, well, Norway don't the Norwegians don't run internationally because we know, well, we all know why.
Yes.
There's nationalities that'll do that a lot cheaper. So what they'll do is they'll bring it down to, you know, hubs in the likes of Oslo and that. But there was another company we visited. They had one electric Volvo. I don't know if they bought it kind of for one contract or to keep a customer happy. But they didn't really seem to have much interest in the truck. I think driver retention might be a little bit of a problem as well. You know, trying to get guys on board to drive them.
Yeah,
maybe that can be overcome. But anyway, that's the direction they're heading, Matt. They have the money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difference, you know. They've a lot of cheap hydropower as well, and plus they've loads of oil and gas and that. So, needless to say, we had a Volvo XC60. That was a 2 liter petrol.
I was just about to say, was your hire car petrol? Was it electric?
Well, I can tell you one thing. I wasn't. There was no way I was buying I was hiring an electric car. You know, I'd maybe at some point, at some point in the future, it'll be probably impossible to buy anything. So now, you know, there is a little bit of a kind of a sense of trying to enjoy it while it's
well, you still can.
you still can, you know. I suppose I have the sentimental view towards Norway. You know, I've always had a fascination for the, like, you know, the sort of the glory days of the sort of mid to late 80s and into the 90s when the really the fish farming took off there, and you know, you had the legendary Steve's Transport and a lot of different companies, you know, doing international work.
Yeah,
in the glory days, you know. So it's still quite nice to go places, and you have your little small service station, and you know, you go in and get coffee, and you know, you get on your diesel powered ferry across the board, and that kind of thing. But they have a different agenda now.
When you sorted out your rental car, was there an option for an electric vehicle? Was there much difference in price? Was it much cheaper to get one on?
I think it was pretty much, the price was all pretty equal, man. Just
so you would have just saved on like your ferries and tolls a bit.
Probably would have, yeah. I didn't even look into it, you know. And even if I was going
to the downtime of charging up a lot, you know, you'd lose a lot of time on your holiday.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just not on board with the whole thing anyway. So yeah. And neither is my mate. So it was actually quite a nice car, Volvo XC60. We had last time we were there, we had a Ford Kuga, and we just thought we'd just go a little bit more. It was quite a nice car. You know, obviously winter tires. It was a hybrid. I never had one before. I don't even know how it works, because every time I looked at the dash, the battery was on zero. So they had to go into a dash. Anyway, look, it's, you had to go into the dash. We were, the joke was it took two people to drive the car, because one to actually hold the steering wheel and one to operate this touchscreen thing in the middle of the dash. Every time you went in, you have to go through four different like swipes or presses to turn off the, what do you call that, lane assist thing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it pull the steering wheel from your hand. So I presume that's coming for trucks now. Maybe it's there already in these new smart dash. You know, before you could just press a button, turn off this lane assist nonsense.
Yeah, so I know with the XG DAFs, you've got a button on the steering wheel and you have to do it. You have to, I think, click right and then scroll down and click it off, like every time, you know, the engine's turned back on. You have to constantly go for it rather than just like the old style switch. Yeah. And from what Dougie's saying, it's going to become law where you can't turn it off at all, which is certainly not ideal for the likes of where me and you live. We're not overrun with large roads, are we? A lot of rural, smaller roads, agricultural areas. It's going to be a real pain.
Yeah.
But there we go. Yeah, so the transport companies you went to visit, did you email and ask if you could pop in, or did you just drop in on a whim, or did you sort of speak just previously?
In.
Just drove in, yeah.
Most places don't have any. Well, so
no,
the plan.
No, they don't have big, like, secure gates or anything, do they? It's just a yard with an entrance.
No, unless you're around Oslo, and even if there was secure gates around Oslo, if the gates were open, we still went in anyway.
Yeah. But,
so the plan I had planned, because I'd been sort of working the week before, and I'd planned a couple of days sit down and send a few emails, but then of course we had no power.
Yes.
So. Everything was out, Wi-Fi was out and all that, so it didn't happen. But anyway, look, at the end of the day, it was like a holiday. There was only one guy I had contacted who, you know, I've been with a few times, and he made sure to say, like, come and you can stay. He's got accommodation there, so we stayed there.
Oh, brilliant.
Really, really good. And there was another company I did an article on a few years ago, maybe, I'm not sure if you remember, they've got red and white trucks, Husvet and Ski, down near Haugesund there, Sandide, they do a lot of hanging meat and box meat. Very nice fleet of Scanias and Volvos. So they actually had got just taken delivery of the first of three new FH16-700 Aeros.
Wow.
So it was quite nice to see that. Yeah, we didn't see a huge amount of Aeros there. Ten and Transport and Strin, they had a new one. It was just ready to go on the road. We were there on a Saturday and it was going on the road on a Sunday. And then there was another company, Zacharias Nesheim, they had a FH16-700. So they're all Aeros, and they'd all gone for the Mirakams.
Yeah.
But when we were talking to the guys at Husvet and Ski, you know, I noticed that the last time we were there, they had all FH500 turbo compounds, which is what Volvo are pushing hard, it seems, more or less everywhere. For fuel consumption, and you know, and from my reading of the situation, a 500 turbo compound revs very, very low and seems to be suited to, you know, long distance transport, but I'm not sure it'd be ideal for, you know, the sort of conditions where it's more stop start going. So anyway, I just kind of questioned him. I said, how come you're going back to the 16700s? And said, oh well, we need the power, you know, the 500 turbo compound doesn't have the power for the kind of work we're doing.
So I
thought that was quite interesting. Another thing to note there, Matt, as well, I was very surprised by, was the amount of dual clutch Volvos. It's, you know, when you look closely at the little badge, sometimes you can say Euro 6, you know, beside the 500 or 540, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But up there, at a rough guess, it seemed to be like 50 or 60% were dual clutch, which you would never see down here.
No.
Quite a truck. So, you know, I just wonder sort of why they were. Personally speaking, I drove one before, and it was probably one of the nicest and fastest trucks I've ever driven. Was a dual clutch.
Yeah,
but don't have big up over here.
Mm. Yeah, I think I don't think I've driven a dual clutch. But from what I understand, the gear change is so quick. It's just a hell of a bit of kit.
If you're driving a standard I clutch, it's kind of hard to understand how something could be that much better or improved, but when you drive one, it's they're really awesome. And I've often said that, you know, it's when you have a huge amount of horsepower, like 750 or 770 at 40 tons or 40 whatever, 44 tons, it's kind of hard to get the full benefit of it. But fast gear changes is actually something that makes a more tangible difference.
Yeah.
And you know, but tough conditions for trucks up there, Matt, like over where we were driving, like we were just saying, it was very rare for a truck just to be sitting at on the limiter at 90 k's on the cruise control.
Yeah.
A lot of start going, you know, sharp hills, corners, a lot of salt on the road. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's the reason they changed the trucks after a few years, you know, whenever they're out of service contract, 400,000 k gone.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said earlier as well, it's the majority of it is single lane track as well, isn't it? It's not just big carriageway for miles and miles and miles. So, yes.
Yeah, another thing we know was a huge amount of trucks had damage to the front bumpers, you know, on the near side bumper. Obviously, the roads are kind of narrow. You get a lot of snow built up at the side of the road. So,
yeah.
Guys seem to be catching bumpers there. It's completely unavoidable, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, I'm going to have to arrange a holiday now to Norway at some point, without a doubt. So,
Well, you touched on the expense there, and it is quite expensive. You know, even the Norwegians are saying to us, "Oh, you know, you come up here and it's expensive," and you know, things have got expensive. You know, in Ireland, as I'm sure they have in England as well, especially accommodation. You know, we were probably spending around somewhere between an average of about maybe €140 per night, you know, that's for a hotel room, whatever, two beds, mm-hmm. you know, split between two. And what can be expensive is eating out.
Yes.
Beer depends where you go. You know. Well, yeah, beer is reasonably expensive, but that didn't deter us, you know, it was always the first thing we had to find a couple of watering holes. Actually, a funny one was we went into Haugesund, and a little gem of a town, really. We found a place called the Captain's Cabin, nice little bar, and we witnessed, much to our delight, a bar fight between old age pensioners, you know, in their 80s. When I say a bar fight, it turned into a scuffle, and we couldn't understand what was said, but one guy said something to another guy, and he stood up, and then someone was grabbed by the lapels, and the next thing, the two of them were in across the table. So we were absolutely overjoyed to see such a spectacle, unexpectedly. So but very nice, very nice people up there, and just an awesome country all in all.
Oh yeah, definitely. So yeah, if you've not been to Norway, get it on your list. And again, look, with the expense, I mean, I just think, well, you're on holiday, aren't you? Just it is what it is. Just spend the money and just work a bit hard when you get back, to recoup it. You know.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it for a long time, and I'm already looking forward to going again. It's just someone said, like, is that any? You know, what about Sweden? It's like, no. Well, first of all, it doesn't have the scenery, and secondly, like the trucks. You know, just for what we're into, the Norwegian gear is the best. And even the people up there, the drivers, like a funny one we noticed, a lot of the drivers wear like a Bluetooth headset, but it's actually a full headset, like, you know, earmuffs and a microphone. If you wore one down here, you'd look like a bit of a dick, but somehow they managed to make it look really, really cool, you know? so that was the story with Norway, Matt. So.
Yeah, fantastic. So before we chat about Norway, you said you've been doing a little bit of driving back at home, or just around Ireland, or are you doing a bit of international work, or
but not so much international yet. I just want to make sure I kind of avail of my time home before I go off international. Not to say that it won't happen or the bug is not there, but no, just national work. Home in the evening. So I've been drove an X-Gen Scania R500 midlift. The first time I'd driven the an R high in the new model.
Yeah,
when I say a new model, they're out since 2017, but
I still call them a new model, or you know, the new Scania. I don't know why. Maybe it's an age thing, you know.
Like I was saying about rust, you know, we saw next gens up there with rust on the driver's side tool locker, which was kind of, you know, it's at the end of the day, like, so they've been out probably 8 years now. So so that was it, just walking floor work in that R500 for a couple of days, fully loaded 46 ton. I didn't really, you know, mind it too much. Seemed to, for by my standards, plenty of pulling power. Other people say different.
Yeah,
I don't know, you know, I'm used to like 600 hard, like 600 horsepower with whatever 120 tons, not really, wouldn't be a huge amount of pulling power, you know, pretty dead. No. So I didn't mind it at all. I thought it was quite adequate, really. Especially if we don't have a huge amount of hills here. And then for the last few weeks, then I was in a 2013 reg or 560 Highline. So quite a nice truck. Maybe a little bit more. The seat was pretty hard, but overall, like a nicely screwed together truck. And I can see why, some guys are sort of hanging onto what they call that streamline generation Scania. The build quality seems to be a lot better than these newer trucks.
I still can't think of them as a streamline, because the 3 Series streamline, that is the streamline, isn't it?
I don't know what you might call them, the classic generation or whatever, but we saw very few of them up in Norway. Obviously, they get rid of the trucks, but that 560 engine, apparently, if you're into your Scanias, that's that's supposed to be the last, the 560 or the 620 were supposedly the last good trucks that Scania made, if you're a real, real diehard.
Right, fair enough. I mean, look, I've said before, I've only ever driven, because they still call it the new, or S-Cab, and I have to say, I was really, really impressed with it, because I was not a big fan of the 4 or the R. I just think they could have been a lot better, but when I drove that S-Cab one, I was just like, it was like sitting in an armchair. just such light steering, just everything just so well thought out. It was just, it was really, really good. And it changed my mind and, brought me back on side to Scania, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah, I suppose everything changes, really. I can't see those trucks lasting near as long as what the older ones did. And I can kind of wonder, when those next gens come out, and I've driven, done trips in them and that, and I can see where you're coming from. Everything is kind of light, the steering is light, and they've improved a lot of things. But certainly, I think if you had a left-hand drive in the older ones, you've got that, you don't have that engine hump affecting your soul. When I was driving that 560 the other day, the engine, you're always trying to find somewhere to put your left leg.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was a nice bit of work. All sort of wood bark and wood chip around Ireland, Matt. So it's nice to be able to keep the hand in.
Yeah, exactly. And like I say, just sort of mix it in with catching up with friends and family whilst you can. Easter will soon be here, and before you know it, you'll be back in Oz.
In all that
terrible weather.
Having said that, I could be out on a trip somewhere next week. God knows if a nice offer comes up.
Can't say no, can you?
but it's not a priority at the moment. So what about yourself?
Just still on the local work, mate. Yeah, nothing too exciting, but it's nice, easy, regular. And it's pretty quiet out there, speaking to several friends and operators. It's sort of ticking along, the usual sort of lull. We've just had the Chinese New Year, so the containers side of things will be a bit slack at the moment. And obviously, with Christmas just sort of behind us, people are just, it's just slowly sort of picking up. So, I'm just lucky that I've got regular sort of work at the moment. And again, it's the whole work life balance. It's ideal. It means I can get swimming, I can go walking, I can get some writing done, researching done. It's ideal really at the moment. So
you have an early start and an early finish. Is it more or less?
Generally speaking, it'll be an early start. Occasionally, get a late start. If it's just sometimes I just do the one job in the day. And if it's like a lunchtime changeover, I don't have to start till sort of 10, half past 10, something like that. And I'm lucky that the times, it's just a rough guide, to be honest. There's no actual sort of booking times, because all I'm doing is changing a trailer that's stood in the mill collecting the sawdust. So it's just kind of down to me. If they said to me, be out there for 7:30 and I got there at 8:30, it wouldn't really matter. However, I normally get in there for, depending on the light in the morning, just to make my life a bit easier. This time of year, I get in there normally about 7:15, something like that, just to get changed over and out with King's Lynn before the traffic starts getting too busy, really.
Gotcha, you made a good point there about work-life balance, and that is something, it can be quite difficult to get with.
Yes.
With truck driving, really, like most of the most of the guys now with that company that I was just doing a bit of casual work for lately, they all stay out at night time now, which, you know, just kind of things have changed, I suppose. And, you know, it's more and more regulation and hours, and it's just, you know, to make the trucks pay, I suppose. But, you know, even if you are, you know, kind of getting home in the evening, it's still, you know, you can, if you do a 9-hour day, or, you know, you're spread over, like it's still quite a long day. It doesn't leave much.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Time really for anything else. So, you know, I suppose a lot of guys out there doing long days, and if you do it five or six days a week, really, it's, you know, it's definitely...
Absolutely. I mean, I've often found it doing day work over the last couple of years. Again, if you're doing long days, day after day after day, with the driving home and you know, getting your food ready, having a wash, getting stuff ready for the next day, you know, it's just, I've often thought, it would be easy just to stay in the truck or do a night out. You know, you're sort of stuck with it, so you just tend to go to bed if you're tired, and you get a longer sleep, you know. So, I mean, with what I do, I never have to worry about, have I had an 11, you know, or is it a 9-hour break? that never affects me, luckily, at the moment. So I haven't really got to think about it. But I'd also say as well, and as much as we obviously love the job, it is important, I think, for people to find interests outside of transport. Just thinking, sort of, I mean, chatting with a good friend of mine this week about it, because a lot of people, especially in this industry, you've driven all your life, been up the road all your life, and you don't have any time for anything else. And when you retire, it kind of kills you, because you've got nothing to do. Or you just get bored, you go back to work. So I think it's kind of important for people to try and find something outside of transport to interest them. Again, as much as I love this job and most of my interests are involved in transport, you know, it's I think I've got too many interests, really. I haven't got time for all. I haven't got time for work.
No bad thing. Yeah, but you know, it's good. Like, I think that's a fair point you made there.
Yeah,
but I suppose most, you know, by and large, most guys who are driving full time, it's
catch-22, isn't it? You don't have the time to try and do anything. Unless you give up the job, and if you're loving the job, you don't particularly want to give it up.
That's right. Yeah. But you know what? I think if you find a job you love, you know, it's definitely,
yes,
you're on the right track anyway.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know,
without a doubt.
And a lot of guys, I think, are quite prepared to make they love the job so much, quite prepared to make the sacrifice. And, you know, we saw quite a lot of young drivers actually just going back to Norway, and that you kind of don't really see as much here.
No, that's good.
They encourage it from a young age, and you know, they encourage it in schools and that. And you know, it'd be nice if they did something like that over here instead of you know,
demonizing everything.
When you say you want to be a truck driver, you're looked at like, you know, something, a bit of dirt that was on the bottom of your shoe. You know, that's how the trade is viewed in a lot of places over here.
Yeah, sadly so. It's. I don't think it's going to change anytime soon either, sadly. You know, we don't have people fighting our corner like the RHA and people like that, you know, trying to actually encourage it, you know, after lockdown and the realisation that there's a driver shortage. We all just got a letter, didn't we, asking us to go back into the industry. And you just think, well, if conditions haven't changed, a lot of the people who've left the industry aren't going to come back, are they?
That's right, yeah. But anyway, it's. You could, I think someone said it lately, you know, there's more kind of drivers, you know, people that have come in probably after COVID that are doing it purely for the money. They don't really have any love for trucks. And
no.
It's, you know, I've often passed, you know, certain trucks on the road or noticed, and you're kind of looking at the truck and you're looking at the driver and you're thinking, you have no interest in trucks whatsoever,
no,
have you?
No, definitely not, no.
Well, I
totally get what you mean. And you can spot them a mile off, can't you? You really can. So,
It's you know, it's kind of tunnel vision, looking straight ahead. If you can't pass them in a spaceship, you know, you'd wonder would they actually even look around, you know.
Probably not.
But that's really all the update for now, Matt, anyway. So
yeah, fair enough, mate. So anything planned in the next few weeks? Just a little bit of work here and there, and that's about it, I suppose, is it?
Yeah. I was kind of having a bit of a thought about doing some stuff for magazines. Just the weather and the lighting has just been so atrocious lately.
Yeah,
trying to set up somewhere to go and take photographs of trucks has been just fraught with so spotted difficulties, so that's been put on the long finger. But you never know, there might be little things crop up here and there, and I think there's you're still doing bits and pieces, aren't you, at the moment?
Yeah, I'm sort of really, really busy with the research and getting into stuff. I was talking to you this week about Renault Magnums, and I have to say, I'd never heard of the Renault Magnum legend until you mentioned it. I've actually managed to find a German guy on Facebook who's still driving one. It was bought new by his boss, and he's still driving it today. So, must be quite difficult in Germany as well with your Euro emission zones and things like that.
I'm pretty sure it was the last special edition they brought out.
And yes.
In about 2012, maybe?
I think he said 2012 he got it, I think it was. So, I mean, that's a 13-year-old truck now. They got a leather dashboard, leather bunk covering. The seats are individually stitched with the limited edition number. And like I said to you, it was a run of 99, and a Dutch company have actually created number 100 out of a 6x2. Although, so it's not an official one, but yeah. they've made number 100. So I'm guessing that perhaps Renault might have hold of the very last Magnum to come off the production, because as far as I'm aware, these are the last trucks ever built as a Magnum, I should say, before the T-Range came out. Yeah. I believe so. I've been quite enjoying looking into them. So if anyone listening knows a bit more about the Magnum legend, and also the Highway 66, I think they were towards the very end of its life as well, weren't they? But I don't think they were available right-hand drive.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen any right-hand drive. And were they called Route 66?
I thought it was Highway, but it could be. It would make more sense for it to be Route 66, so it's probably me getting it wrong.
There was a few in Ireland.
Yeah.
You're right, there were left-hand drive only. I'm not sure, was it vinyl kind of graphics that was on them?
Yeah.
There was around.
So would they have had anything else other than just the graphics? Would there have been something...
I presume they had something on the dash, or maybe the interior, or the seat stitch, or if it was a factory special edition, they probably did something else like that.
I'd like to think so. Otherwise, it's kind of like, well, what's the point if you're just getting some stickers? It's a bit of a waste of time, isn't it? So, whereas the legend, I believe they were all 520s, 4x2 left hand drive, white top, white cab, and then the bottom half was matte black. Pair of air horns on the roof.
And it said, I think they might have had a Voigt or Charter as well.
Okay.
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
But they're becoming more rare on the road now. I'm always looking out to see if there was, the other day I saw two of them, and you sort of sit upright in your seat and have a good look around when you see them. There's a 4x2 left-hand drive one still running down in County Cork. I've seen that quite a few days. And because they're getting rarer, they stand out. They've always been a kind of a standout truck.
Oh, yeah. You spot them a mile off.
Oh, yeah. Now you spot them a mile off, exactly. And now you really notice them even more.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's been enjoyable. And the Vintage Vault stuff, that's come along quite nicely. Still got a few projects on that on the go at the moment to get stuck into. So yeah, it's all going pretty good, mate, to be honest.
I've been catching up on some of your Vintage Vaults there. I quite enjoyed the one on the John M. Phillips 143.
Lovely chap, John is. He's really good to talk to. Yeah, such a nice guy. So
genuine.
Yeah, and just what a truck. It was just fantastic. Yeah. Back when there was so much more individuality out there, in my opinion, to customising trucks.
I agree. And I don't think there was the same amount of kind of money floating around as well. So if someone did a truck, it was like, wow, you'd kind of stand back. Whereas now it's a case of like, well, it seems to be a lot of money, but not necessarily, you'd kind of, it's hard to make trucks as kind of distinctive.
Individual,
I suppose, because it's just like, well, it's not all about money, really. It's just, maybe it's cab shape. I think like it's cabs are so much bigger now, whereas back then cabs were smaller. There was a lot more chrome and stuff you could bolt onto them. And there was
much more variety of cab sizes back then, wasn't there? From a Globetrotter to an FL10 or a P-cab Scania. And it didn't, and even like the rigids, it's little day cab rigids that would get customized to take the truck. it was just... Yeah. Really different times,
Everything was better in the past, Matt.
Oh, yes, as every older person will tell you, won't they? But for, yeah, interestingly enough, a friend of mine has recently bought, I think it's an FL10, and his plan is to customise it in a like late 80s, early 90s style. That's his plan, you know, because that's what he grew up sort of idolising, and that's what he's aiming to replicate, which I'm really looking forward to, because that would be just, that'd be great.
Someone made the point, you know, they were kind of saying that, well, you know, we're all, everyone, well, not everyone, but, you know, people are restoring F-16s and 143s, and they're saying, yeah, but what about the everyday, you know, the home trucks? Like, that's not what was going around back then. Like, that was not, you know, the popular trucks were like an FL or, you know, like a 113 PCAB. But I sort of made the point, well, the thing is, the guys who were restoring these trucks, it never had those high-powered ones back in the day. That was the posters they had in the wall, and that was the one. That was the one that they kind of idolized. So now they've come to an age where they're in a position to do it. Like, they're not going to do the one, the supermarket one. They want the one that they dreamed about. So
exactly, And I think there's probably a little bit of all them fleet spec trucks either just got scrapped or exported. Whereas something like an F-16. Because of what it is, and because it's a bit more unusual and costs more money, it's more likely to have been held onto by somebody purely for them reasons. So, you know, all the FL-10s will just get scrapped, let's say exported, whatever, you know. So there's less of them about to save, potentially.
Yeah, that's possibly true as well, yeah. The first truck I ever drove was an FL-7 eight-wheeler. That was an English truck. And, great truck, Eminox stack. Didn't matter. It was, you know, it was kind of, you never forget the first truck you had as an employee driver.
No, you don't. My first Arctic was a 4-series Scania, T810JBJ it was. 4-series flat roof, 420. And as I'm sure people have said before, you know, my very first, what I count as a truck, was a Mercedes 814. And, as I said on a previous podcast with Ben, it's, the 7.5-ton days. So I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole again. We've covered that already.
Nice little 14.
Dear little thing. Absolutely love it. You know,
when Mercedes were, well, I don't know. When Mercedes were, a lot different than they are now. I would say they're.
That was the truck to have for a youngster anyway, certainly. Yeah. So, So, but anyway, so before I get all nostalgic yet again, to apologise to any younger listener, try not to get too nostalgic all the time.
We'll probably wrap it up, but I actually wrote a piece for From the Sharp End. It's in the latest issue of the magazine, and it's just kind of addressing that thing of the older sort of generation drivers versus the younger generation, and it's kind of given a bit of a shining a bit more of a positive light on some of the younger guys that probably sick of hearing about how great everything was in the old days, and don't actually really have it that easy themselves with the amount of regulation and that they have to put up.
Absolutely not. They've got
just a little bit of balance, you know. I think a friend of mine who said you are of your era, you know, so. You can't really, it's unfair to compare drivers nowadays to drivers back then, because you can't choose when you were born. That's just when you were born.
That's right.
If you had been born then, you'd be just as good as those guys, or if they were born now, that, you know. So it's I think it's important to remember that, you know, you are of your era.
Without a doubt. Yeah, 100%.
Wisdom of knowledge.
Yeah, I think it's time to call it a day for this one, I think, mate. It's been a pleasure, Paul, and we shall have to catch up before you head back down under in a few weeks' time.
For sure, Matt. Yeah, no problem at all.
All right, mate. Well, enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Yep, you too, mate. Good chat.
And you. See you soon, mate.
All the best.
Ta-da.
Cheers, man. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, sponsored by Fortune Tyres. Fortune Tyres and International Tyres, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltyres.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tyres.